one's got it better than us.
No way!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught. Touchdown, Keenan Allen. What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six.
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Yard touchdown. 90-yard touchdown.
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught. Touchdown, Chargers.
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everybody, Bolt fam. Welcome to the Thunder Down Under podcast. This is not a test. Do not worry. I know our wonderful, wonderful host's voice is not ringing true in your ears right now. It's my voice. It's Jack here with my wonderful friend, Alistair. And the dogs are out, baby. The dogs. They're dogs and they're eating olives out of a jar, baby. It's a win. We got a win. Pop, 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 pop. Andy, I'm sorry. That's a terrible introduction, but I can't do what you do. So I just had to do something off the top of the dome. Alistair, how are you, my friend?
Mate, few people have the pipes you do to be able to just hold that dulcet tone for about a minute before we come in. It's good that we've got a duo show. Neither of us will get a word in edgeways because each other will just be speaking the whole time, which is great. We don't have Andy to mediate the discussion. We'll get to see if Andy listens or not because I get to see the analytics where people are tuning in from. We'll see if there's a bright red spot in Bali where he's having a lovely holiday with his sister, brother-in-law, wife, and also their little kid. So hopefully you're listening. Hopefully you're soaking up the rays. But we've got football to talk about. We've got no weeks off, Jack. No weeks off at all.
No weeks off, baby. That's how we do it. And if this is your first time listening, welcome. Welcome. Please like and subscribe. Check us out on X. You can find us at TDU. Alistair, I'm at TDU. Jack, I had Jalen Rager can't catch. I've had to get rid of that because clearly Jalen Rager can catch. So I've got to eat my humble pie on that one. But subscribe to our YouTube channel, interact with us on X. We're always there. We love a chat. It helps us out too. You know, we're closing in on 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube, which is wonderful in our third year, and we're just watching it grow. So not much else to really to say other than just I get straight into it.
Let's get into it.
So I reckon we just start, you know, we normally go through important, challenging, interesting and questions, but because there's only two of us, let's just see where this free-flowing discussion goes. I'll get us started. And where I want to start is two screens and a rollout naked to start the game on offense. Greg Roman's, everyone going, we're a running team, we're a running team, we're a running team. But you know what? Greg Roman goes, screw that. We're going to go pass, 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 baby. I actually didn't mind it. I'm looking at it going, that shows some adaptability. It shows some difference. And Herbert playing the way he did last week, and obviously we'll talk about how Herbert played this week, I really enjoyed it. I actually quite liked Roman's game. What say you?
Agree. I think Roman got a bit excited. He's playing the Xbox and he starts mashing the button. After last week, he thought, hey, pass to win works every time with Herbert. So he thought, all right, let's start it off this way. The poor guy, though, unfortunately, again, it was a bit of a slow start for the Chargers on offense. They only scored the one field goal on their first five drives. I know, Jack, you gave us a World War I analogy a show ago. Yes, We're really modern with our references, a war that ended over 100 years ago. But again, I reckon this game would have made Field Marshal Sir Douglas Haig proud because it was an old-fashioned war of attrition between these two teams. Not the kind of football in the first half would get asses on seats, as the US would say. There were 70,000 people at SoFi Stadium. Not sexy football, but... you know, it was the kind of grinding it out performance the Chargers needed to show they're capable of after Arizona out-physicaled us last week, I thought.
I think I made a prediction as well that the game would be 18-15 or something on with just field goals being kicked. And at halftime, I was kind of looking at going, hey, you know what? I actually might be right here. Of course, we scored the touchdown. But, you know, how many games do you watch for a majority of the time in the first half that the score is 2-3? Not many. I actually can't remember. Yeah, bar that play calling, which was interesting. It also confused Mark Sanchez in the bit in the booth a little bit. He's going, "What's going on here? This is the Chargers are meant to be a running team, etc., etc." It was a war of attrition, and it was nice to see the Bolts bounce back. Because I remember I did comment last week that I thought they walked into Arizona and they just lost the battle of wills. They just could not stick with them for whatever reason, whether they were on the road. But it was really, really nice to see them come out. And I guess that was signified by Cam Hart coming out, absolutely laying the boom. I know I'm jumping the defense there.
Yeah, but fair enough.
Physicalness, I think that's a really good place to start. And obviously the Bozeman protection on Herbert. Did you want to say something about that?
Yeah, I probably fall in the minority when it happened. I wasn't as up in arms as everyone. I kind of saw that Shepherd, who's a big man, was lying on the ground. Might not have known where the ball was, so tried to bring him down. But in the moment, I might have had a drink or two. Seeing Bozeman get up and then just punish him into the ground, it's what you want to see from your center, no lineman, right? Coming to the aid of your quarterback. And the last thing we need is an inadvertent injury to a guy who's playing maybe as well as any quarterback in the league over the last 2 weeks. What did you think about it though, Jack? You're the big O-line aficionado. Is it the right thing to do? Because it caused an offsetting of penalties in the end.
Oh, listen, at the end of the day, that's what you want to see from your O-line. Because if you don't see that, the national media is questioning, does this team believe in Justin Herbert? Or what is going on with the culture at the Chargers? It's one of those ones very rarely in the world that we live in now where we don't want to see violence on the field. We want to see players being good sportsmen with sportsmanship and empathy and kindness with a little bit of, you know, obviously you want to have a bit of attitude. I thought the play itself, if I'm being honest, the first one I looked at it, I've gone, Justin Herbert's put a little bit of mayo on that, I reckon, because he's trying to get a flag. But then when you look at it, he's kind of ankle locked him and then really rolled up his calf. And almost, you know, you could imagine that if his ankle and foot got stuck in the turf, you've got 120 kilos of man rolling up on you. That's a pretty dirty play, man.
People are going to unsubscribe if we don't say that Shepherd is a cheater and Dennis Allen, he should have been ejected. He should get fined and he should be suspended for the rest of the year.
I mean, and the response from Bozeman is great. And you even see Herbert getting up being like, oh shit, you know, like, ooh, that's happened. Okay. Like, you know, trying to pull him away. But at the end of the day, that has got the team national media attention. It's on Pat McAfee. I was just watching their reactions there. So I think it's a net good. And I don't mind the offsetting penalties. It is what it is. And you got to protect your quarterback at all costs.
Yeah, I agree. So the first half, it started a little shaky. I thought we kind of won the battle of wills, but maybe not in the way you'd expect, Jack. I felt like what was working was play action pass. And in this game, Roman is killing it with play action pass. They went 14 of 17, 161 yards and a touchdown. The running game still doesn't quite seem to me like it's working. And there are still some issues with the offensive line in run blocking, and we'll get to pass protection later. But just to hone in on the running game, what are you seeing from that at the moment? Still a work in progress, going well, going poorly?
Well, I don't know why we aren't seeing more runs outside zone. I don't know why we're seeing more runs, outside of Alt, who didn't lose a snap. I think 38 snaps without giving a pressure. Obviously, that was in the past game. But, you know, more outside. I mean, Dobbins ran angry after Kamara was running angry at us for a while. And it seemed to be that's where a lot of success is sort of coming. It's sort of a pattern now. Again, I just don't think there's enough guts on the interior. And as much as I sung Bozeman's praise for defending Herbert, I just don't think Pipkins is a road grader. And Zion Johnson is weirdly enough, I see him lose more one-on-ones than I'd like as well as a first rounder. There was one I know this is pass protection, but I think it was Bozeman and Zion, or it was Pipkins, I can't remember, but there was a double team and they lost it. I think it was Saunders burst through.
Yeah, he's a big man.
He is a big guy, but and the pulling interior is just not working either. There's a lot of, even Matlock, I find when he's moving around the line, is almost struggling to find where to go in a gap scheme and trying to find a body. So it's still a bit of a work in progress. What do you think?
I agree with you that I think you know, especially in this next game coming up, you've got some opportunities to stretch teams out wide with your running game. See if Darius Davis is healthy or not, but those sweeps, tosses, end arounds, they have been effective for the Chargers so far. And I know Greg Roman is trying to instill an identity. Harbaugh and Roman do believe in running a gap scheme. They like to go north and to south between the tackles if they can. But you do need to show flexibility of approach, Jack. And I would say you look at what the skills are of our five linemen. Slater is an athletic lineman. Alt is athletic. Zion is fairly athletic. Those are the types of guys who work out better in space rather than having to down block and hold someone up to get in between a tiny hole. And as you said, guys like Matlock are still learning the fullback position. The tight ends probably aren't blocking that much better, with the exception of Disley. Tomlinson is no greater an upgrade to me than some of the tight ends who were on the roster last season. So that's one thing I'd like to see change in the coming weeks, more shifting to outside runs. What about through the air? We've got a lot of ways we can go with this. Do we want to start with your boy? Let's start with a second-round pick from Georgia. Ladd McConkey becomes the first Charger rookie with 100 receiving yards since Keenan Allen in 2013.
Oh, I love it. 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 I love it.
Wow. What a game. And I think it started early. He had a couple of really early catches, and he's clearly becoming Justin Herbert's target. He's looking for him a lot more, I feel, in his progressions. McConkey is also just getting that wiggle that we saw, and what really excited me, that the body English that he shows at the top of his routes to really
I
sell
like
them.
That phrase.
Yeah, the body English. It's a NBA, or it's a basketball phrase. So I didn't make that up myself. But he's and he sort of feels a little bit more confident. And again, I did bring up that he might have been taking some unnecessary hits by the way that he's falling and the way that he's trying to get those extra yards. I sort of feel from those couple of really big hits he took, that's changed a little bit, and he's kind of figuring out his body in space. But boy, I had no idea that he could moss people like he did.
Right.
That catch that he had against Alonte Taylor, I sort of went, whoa. What did you see?
He won in different ways. So far, he's really won kind of underneath, intermediate. He'll make a couple guys miss and take off. Well, we saw again he can do that, but we started to see Herbert think, you know what, if I just trust it and throw it deep to this guy, he can actually catch. And it wasn't even just that 50-plus yard touchdown we all remember. It was also the red zone touchdown where Herbert's kind of scrambled to his left and just thought, I'll chuck up a prayer ball here. And again, he's come down with that one. So I know a lot of Chargers fans were hoping that we would upgrade at the receiver room ahead of the trade deadline. Ladd McConkey puts in a performance like that, and your boy Jalen Reagor catches that one-on-one on the outside on Kool-Aid McKinstry. Yeah. Maybe they're thinking we can go in a different direction, Jack. It was incredible. It was pretty incredible from Ladd. He's just building those blocks. Each week he's getting a bit better, and it's an exceptional start for his career, man.
I mean, I know that there's been a lot of highlights of that first touchdown where he makes the moves after the catch, but I did want to highlight how good of a throw the second touchdown to Ladd McConkey was.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Justin Herbert, and he's playing at an elite level. What was his PFF grade? 95.3, the highest of his career, the best he's looked. This is now something that we've seen 2 weeks in a row. Is there a quarterback at the moment that's playing better? I would say perhaps not over the last 2 weeks. But that throw that he makes, there aren't many quarterbacks that can do that. Puts it on a dime, puts it on a place that only Ladd McConkey can grab it at 6 foot-ish, if he's even that. So I thought that was impressive. And on the watch back, you go the one, you know, the big touchdown, it's sexy because he runs, you know, an extra 30 yards or whatever. But that red zone, and I think I liked it more because of our red zone issues, was so exciting. Let's stay on Herbert. I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
This is the first time we've seen Herbert really use his legs. And boy, I got off the couch when I saw that. How does his mobility, and how do you see his mobility moving forward impacting the game's flow? And do you reckon we're going to see more Justin Herbert running this week and beyond?
I think it will be a week-to-week proposition. What I think was great about this performance is it told us all, if the offense is stagnant, Herbert now knows he has this card up his sleeve. if people aren't going to put a spy on him, or if people are going to drop into coverage and think, oh, we can cover Palmer and Fehoko, it just adds that extra element that someone like Josh Allen does, that Lamar obviously did. I don't think, Jack, we're going to see a lot of like QB designed runs necessarily, but it only takes a couple of these moments for you as a quarterback to realize, hang on, I can do this. Clearly, he feels good in his ankle at this stage. He really had to hit a second gear.
Oh yeah,
as he passed through the linebackers, and he's still a little bit like a fawn, or you know, Bambi, as he kind of gets to the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, a foal, a fawn, Mr. Tumnus.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Herbert. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, that's where my mental state's at. We have one win. I'm in Narnia. But he doesn't quite know what to do with the end of his runs, does he? Whether to slide or to turn out or run out of bounds. To be fair, he doesn't do it all that often. What do you think it's going to mean going forward for the offense, Herbert being able to do that?
I have never seen that second gear from Justin Herbert, never. And when I saw those two linebackers, or was a corner and a linebacker closing in, I've gone, oh no, he's going to take a huge hit here and we should just go down. But he just sort of, you know, I mean, he's 6'6". He's 110-ish kilos and he's 6'6". That's a big man moving.
Massive.
You know, and I always thought Josh Allen has that gait to him, but Josh Allen is a little bit more of a bulldozer in the way that he's built. Justin Herbert looked like an athlete. So I don't want to see design runs where Herbert is running like that often, because I think the more you do it with the injury history that he's had up until this point, I'd rather keep him clear. He's a far better passer than he is a runner.
Or at least whip it out in big games later in the season.
Yeah.
Defenses haven't seen it.
Keep it in the back pocket, I think. I think that's where it needs to stay. Because if he gets the confidence up to go, oh, you know, the pocket's collapsing, I'm going to try and get out of here, that's when we see Justin Herbert getting caught up trying to throw and getting his leg snapped off like we did in, you know, week two or whatever it was, which, you know, scared the living daylights out of us.
All right, as we kind of round away from offense eventually, how would you kind of encapsulate your feelings about the team? Because let me kind of put a couple of things to you. I feel like the screen game took a step backwards. So it seemed that the Saints were really ready to blow up a number of screens. You saw Pete Werner come out and blow up at least two or three of those. In the first few weeks of the season, that was one of our only good ways to get chunk plays, throwing those to Disley or Dobbins. We scored 2 second-half touchdowns, which we haven't done. We haven't scored any since week one. So that's good. But does this... what do we score? 23 points? Does this 26-point performance feel like the offense has kind of got it going now? Or do you think when you really dive into it, there are still things to be concerned about?
Oh, I always go back to Roman wasn't built in a day. What I will say for the positive side, before I go to some of the negatives, is that at least we're looking at at least Roman has come out and tried to win a bit differently. The screen game's not working, because if I was the defensive coordinator for the Saints, I'd be like, where is the success of the Chargers offense coming? The week before that, it was the screen game. Take that away from us. Prepare your linebackers for it. You know, you've got the Saints defensive line played a good game, I thought, as well. We just couldn't get it moving on the ground, and let Justin Herbert beat you with his arm. And it's exactly kind of what happened. I like the fact that Roman didn't play and try to force anything. It didn't really feel like there was, you know, we're in this drive, you know what, we're up by two scores, we're going to try and establish the run. All right, run, 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 turnover. I still felt there's a balance in the force happening. Nice. Negatively, the run game, and we talked about the offensive line, the run game is just almost non-existent. And against a better defense like we have in Cleveland, that might come back to haunt us.
Yeah. I agree. I thought this game would look very different if it wasn't for a few receivers making contested catches when they needed to most. In the prediction show last week, we said how the Saints are going to play a lot of man on the outside because Kool-Aid McKinstry and Marshawn Lattimore are very good man coverage corners. I thought in the first half, McKinstry had a couple of really good reps. He punched that ball out on the first drive of the game, which the broadcaster spent about 3 minutes thinking was a catch, but it was actually a PBU. And It looked a bit hairy, but then in the second half, it was McConkey on Alonte Taylor exploiting that matchup. It was Jalen Reagor on Kool-Aid McKinstry. It was Josh Palmer getting open down the field. Those plays, I thought, Jack, were really what made the difference in this game.
And you can't rely on that every week because we don't have a dominant X receiver. And so perhaps you go back to what you said before, is that maybe we don't need one. I'm still not putting faith in the wide receiver room to do that every week. Maybe no. One in every four, perhaps.
And there are still these drops too, Jack, like the really nice, amazing play. We put it up on TDU film today of Herbert going through about four progressions, sees Disley down the seam.
Ugh. Just doesn't catch it.
Couldn't have walked up and placed it into his hands better than that.
Supreme throw. Let's talk about it before we move on to the defense, because you and I have had a bit of a, is it tete-tete or tit-a-tit? I don't know what it is.
Not a tit-a-tit. It's a tete-tete, head-to-head. Yep.
A head-to-head about the protection. And it is nothing new because Daniel Popper really went at Harbaugh during the week in terms of how Popper was asking Harbaugh the fact that the offensive line doesn't seem to be picking up blitzes. And it seems to be when the opposition rush more than four, especially when we're looking at those cornerbacks coming, you know, coming from the slot, we're just leaving runners free. Now you and I were sort of going, I'm of the opinion that there is a bit of an issue here. And you were like, oh, maybe not so much. So let's battle it out here.
Let's have an exploratory discussion, shall we?
Okay. Okay. That's a better way. No trench warfare. Let's go to detente. I'm very big on, it was early in the first quarter and Justin Herbert clearly yells out, big red Sally, big red Sally, big red Sally. Clear audible, clear, clear, clear. He's seen something. And what needs to happen doesn't happen, because a second or two after the snap, you've got Bozeman and I believe it's Pipkins down the field looking like it's a screen. Justin Herbert's being enveloped. Dobbins doesn't even look like he's popping out for the screen. Mm-hmm. That is directly the play before the bungled snap goes out of the end zone for J.K. Dobbins. That was some of the worst football, and I was watching that going, oh my gosh. Then there were another few examples, but I do believe that there is a communication issue between, I don't know if it's quarterback, it's Roman, or it's offensive line. Players aren't knowing the protections. What say you? What did you see on TDU film today?
I saw more pressures on Herbert that were kind of unblocked than I would like to see. Overall, for the entire game, Herbert was not pressured as much as in previous weeks. I will just say I think it was the lowest of the year, according to PFF, 28%. And that's why he was able to operate. So glass half full. Overall, the offense was able to operate through the air, but maybe some of that is because they were using play action and rollouts and things that protect the offensive line. What we continue to see and what I put on TDU film, every single week it's a twist or a stunt that is unblocked to Zion's side. Every single week it happened in the first quarter again, Chase Young. You have one-on-one losses that you can live with. Like, I don't want to focus on him, but Zion also lost a one-on-one at one point with a swim move to, it was either Kalen Saunders or Granderson straight through. The ones you don't like to see, Jack, as you say, are the overload blitzes where it looks like the team hasn't executed the plan. I'm sure they have a plan, but it is also harder to execute perfectly than we all think. If you watched every offense in every game of the NFL every week, you will see two or three blitzes get home on third and long. The defense can send five rushes or six or seven. They can do delayed blitzes. And teams will have different rules. You've got to identify what they're in before the snap. You've then got to react after the snap. You've got to know when they're hot, they're bringing an extra rusher than you can block. And then what are our rules when that happens? And I think oppositions face us and realize, hey, this team's weapons, most of them are new to the team or just not very experienced. You've got McConkey, you've got QJ when he's healthy, Fehoko. We're going to just bank on our ability to get home or just create enough confusion that it's going to work a few times. Bigger picture, I don't think it's happening so frequently that I'm thinking, oh no, we have something that's going to kill off our season. I don't think it's kind of that deadly issue that is unable to be solved. See, except the stunt is different. The stunt need to fix up.
I am going to disagree with you there, because the one part of what you say I do agree is that you watch other games, and we all watch other games intermittently and things, and that blitzers get home and et cetera, et cetera. However, the way that the blitzers work against us really irks me, because it happens in big moments in big games. Happened against KC, it happened against Arizona, and again, there seems to be the way and the lack of recognition means there is someone careening toward Herbert in a way that you just don't want to see. And I worry with Herbert's mindset of I'm kind of big and strong is that eventually one of those is going to come from the blind side and it's going to be ribs again, or it's going
to
be something.
Or he likes to try and stay upright while a defender's draped over him and get the throw off. He's got to stop doing that, because he often gets so incredible throws off. But then the force, it ends up becoming a hip drop tackle when that happens. He can't do it.
And, you know, you watch the great ones, and generally you look at that way Mahomes has changed his game, or the way Brady changed his game. Brady took some absolute shots in his early career, and he learned if he just goes, if the protection's failed, I'm just going to go, nah, thank you very much, cheers. And you've got to think that sometimes that might take the sting out of a blitz just ever so slightly. If you go, hey, we're bringing seven, and Brady goes, incompletion. They go, oh, okay. Every single time a rush or a blitz isn't getting home, the will of that team just drops a little bit, I think. So there is a little bit of work, I think, from the OC, from the coaching, from the communication to the relationship between the center and his two guards, and also the center and his quarterback, and also the quarterback to the offensive line.
And let's call it what it is, Jack. The problem is the three interior offensive linemen. We have already a tackle duo that's established themselves as the best in the NFL, or if not the top five, and they're playing very well. So it is all of them, but in particular it's the interior line. Probably can't do anything about it at the trade deadline, but we'll see. All right. Okay. Shall we flip over? Let's talk about defense for a little bit.
We should. Question hot off the bat. What defensive vulnerabilities did you see against a middling to not even a top 32 quarterback in Rattler? What did you see? Let's start there and build.
I think the 8 points the Saints scored in this game could easily mislead you as a Chargers fan into feeling a level of comfort about a team who is, let's be fair, the number one scoring defense in the NFL. We've allowed 13 points per game. If you watch that game, though, the Saints managed to accumulate 366 total yards despite having those backup quarterbacks that you said, Jack. Alvin Kamara had multiple explosive plays. It seemed like we did struggle to bottle him up in the running game or in the passing game. And I'll tell you right now, having got through the coach's film today, I would have counted no fewer than six passing concepts where the receivers got open against our quarters coverage, and Rattler or Hayner just threw the ball behind the receivers. And there were just all these almost plays. You might remember there was a deep post route that Alave and the quarterback just weren't on the same page. Yeah. Hart was trailing him. That's a 50-yard touchdown if that's thrown accurately. And there were multiple. I think the issue is Jasir, Tahib, Hart all being on the field and rotating around when Fulton gets out. Be careful in this Browns game, because I think where they need to start is tightening up those in-breaking routes into the middle of the field, because the Saints missed a lot of opportunities in this game. What do you think?
Well, I'm just going to throw it straight back to you. You talked about SCBs. You noted that Gilman is actually not having a great stretch at the moment. And Derwin, whilst we see him making impactful plays at the line of scrimmage and we see him roaming, I don't know what's happening. As you said, if it's Derek Carr there, I think this game goes a little bit differently as well. Even if you just got two or three of those more, and Chris Olave, I think, must have had concussion, because that hit that Cam Hart put on him was, I honestly thought it was helmet to helmet. I've gone, oh no, he's giving away another one. But yeah, what is happening at the top of the field, and what did you see from the film today?
Firstly, I thought Derwin actually played a little better than his grading showed for PFF and what I noticed on the broadcast. He did have three or four plays around the line of scrimmage. Now, he's not the Derwin James we want him to be or need him to be, but I am seeing steady improvement each week after he had some time off with the suspension. Aloe Gilman, he's having a rough time of it. At the moment, I don't think he's trusting his eyes. I think he's late to react. You can see he's getting frustrated with himself. He's taking slightly poor angles. And let's call it for what it is. Elijah Molden's been the best safety on the team this year. Better than Derwin, better than Alohi. He arrived during the offseason. So the DB group has some work to do. I want to give credit to Jasir and Steele and Hart. It's a makeshift group, and I thought overall they played quite well. But something is still not quite right on the back end. And for the two of the real leaders of the team, Gilman and Derwin, we need this play to step up.
And it must be challenging, right? The Fulton experience, whilst it was fruitful in the first number of games, he essentially locked down his quarter or his third of the field when he was on there. And I think that freed up Gilman and Derwin James a little bit more. Perhaps it was just a little bit more trust. But even when you don't have Asante out there, and I know we were having the discussion again offline, you know, if Asante is even our second choice cornerback anymore, there is perhaps that they're just a little bit hesitant, Gilman and Derwin, to play super free with essentially three rookies on the field. I know Jasir Taylor's not a rookie, but you know, he's a sort of a middling draft pick. I trust Minter to work that out. I highly doubt we're going to be looking at another free agent coming in or a trade at cornerback or secondary. So the guys we've got in the secondary, we're just going to have to deal with.
We're nitpicking, right? Like ultimately, yeah, we have to find things. The teams, there are certain metrics. They're the best defense in the league at the minute. We'll get into the conversation between Popper and Harville a little later. But I mean, we have to try and look at the things that aren't working. And the last 3 weeks, I've seen a few more blown or busted coverages and a bit of finger pointing. And, oh, I wasn't quite in the right spot on that play than in the first 4 weeks.
And you know what? It's teething issues. And as I said, yeah, I know. Perhaps I shouldn't have started negative, but I just sort of it was on my run sheet, so I thought I'd ask it. But I thought Tia Tart possibly had his best game as a Charger as well. What a difference it's made having big boys in the middle and athletic big men as well. Let the man jump, boom, 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 get him up. I love it. And Tuli has also put another stamp on becoming and perhaps usurping Joey Bosa. I mean, we'll just touch on that very briefly. But again, he sounds like a completely broken individual, unfortunately. Physically broken, should I say. I shouldn't say.
One of the most emotional press conferences, the one he gave on Friday. Check it out, listeners, if you weren't able to see it. A very honest, raw discussion. He says the pain he suffered from this oblique or sort of hip injury through his sciatic nerve was excruciating. He couldn't sleep at all during the night. It just was inadvertent and then got worse and worse. And unfortunately, I know they worked him in with 20 snaps. It looks like he suffered a separate injury. Like they haven't released what it was, but it looked like something is with his foot or lower leg. And Talezi Fuanga just made him look like a subgrade pass rusher. So that was not great. And then I still question if we're going to call into question certain personnel decisions. I don't really get why Christian Fulton's playing, man. I mean, he's come out of the game with a hamstring. They haven't done an MRI to assess what the severity is, but he played 10 snaps with a hamstring injury last week. He played 20 this week. It's the sort of injury you just put them on ice for 3 or 4 weeks at this part of the season. I disagree with that management of the player.
On Bosa, he's because I watched a couple of his snaps just to try and figure out where and when he might have re-hurt himself. He just looks bizarre. He's almost loping around and he's doing his pass rush moves kind of like it just didn't look crisp. It didn't look tight. It didn't look powerful. It almost looked like he's sort of almost like limping a bit and favoring certain parts of his body. So, I mean, Joey, don't try and come back, man. Just if we make a playoff run, take the next however long you need off. You never know. He could have stuff written into his contract about snaps and games played and being named and things. But for all of the criticism and support, I guess this podcast has shown Joey Bosa, because we've done both, right? You know, there was the helmet smash and all that. I'm with you and in thinking that the press conference that we saw was very sad. Actually, it's probably saddest I've seen him.
Yeah. He played so well in week one against the Raiders. Yeah. That was one of the best I've seen him play. So he must be as frustrated as we are. Joey, hope you get better. One other thing I wanted to mention on the defense, Jack, was last week we did mention Colson might need some time in the sin bin after he took that bad angle on Kyler Murray. Well, guess what? He did. Yeah. He was down to 10 snaps. I thought he made those snaps count too, so that's what you want to see. But for now, I feel better, more comfortable with Perryman and Henley on the field the way we saw against the Saints, instead of trying to do this split the three of them all game. That's my preference.
And dare I say, you know, the one thing that we haven't spoken about a lot this year, both positively or negatively, which generally means they're doing a great job, are the linebackers. Like Perryman has been very good and Henley has been good as well. Yeah. Very rarely do we see and have we said that, oh, our linebackers got exploited in this game. We'll see perhaps when we play some more high-powered offenses and they can sort of pick us apart a bit. But on the whole, the linebacker position, good job. Anything else? I think we need to shout out to JK Scott. What did you see in the punting? He was booming them.
One of his best. And that's what you need in a war of attrition.
Yeah.
And that's why I've got to get used to the comfort of our offense not moving the ball and it still being okay, because I think I'm used to the Brandon Staley regime where if the offense was not humming, you knew the defense was going to allow a lot of points. This is what you do, that you've got to lift each other up and play complementary ball. The defense continues to smother opposition. And this was a game where special teams, JK Scott lands three inside the 20. He averaged 50-odd yards per punt. I thought it was fantastic. And the coverage units were on fire as well. AJ Finley, Stone Smart, who would have been upset. He only played one snap on offense. Highest graded player on special teams. So keep it up, Ficken, Ficken, Ficken.
And I guess let's just stay on special teams for just a little bit more to highlight whatever happened between our long snapper and our punter to cause the safety after the Big Red Sally complete debacle. That was Chargers football of old. That was Staley. That was all God, that we got the collie wobbles. Didn't happen. Ended up winning by 3 scores. What did you see from Harbaugh this week in terms of his decision-making? And again, we're chatting with our great friend Ryan and Kyle on that. And, you know, our opinions are split on if Harbaugh is making the right decision to go for 1 point, which Dicker misses, instead of going for two. There's a couple of times he's, again, out in the field yelling, 10, 10, 10, 10. You know, there was a couple of weird challenges, I thought.
Oh, he was going overall mental on that 10, wasn't he? He was going mental.
Holding up
that.
His fingers, doing the Jameis Winston, trying to eat them, like, you know. But overall, I think the culture that he's instilling, you know, because I watched that, had my head in my hands and go, hold on, no, this is different. We end up coming and winning 26-8. What did you see of the Harbaugh experience on the sideline this week?
So, like, the way the game gets managed overall is fine, because I trust that the team is well coached and players execute and know their roles, right? I will just observe, I think there has not been a week where there has not been at least one decision from a game management perspective that I've viewed as too conservative. I'm all for some of the conservative ones where, okay, it's 4th and 3 at midfield, but let's punt. It's 4th and 3 at the 38. Let's go for a 55-yard field goal instead of going for it. There are times, though, where we're the 32nd most conservative team in the NFL by the fear index and metrics. We go for it the fewest amount of times. The one that bothered me this week was the extra point one you said, Jack, because I thought that's a bit of a kind of a free opportunity to make it a 2-score game. The score was 9-2 when Dobbins ran it in from the 2-yard line. And your choice there is to go up by 8 points or to try a 2-point conversion and go up by 9 points. your win probability if you get up to 9 points is drastically higher than 8 points. And if you miss the two-point conversion, you still have a seven-point lead. That was one where I just thought, I'm sure he's not even thinking about it. Like, he looks like he's not even thinking about it. So I will mention the ones I think he should have done differently, but also acknowledge he has a process. Thus far, the process has worked. And I did mention this on TDU film, and at least three or four people have told me what a fucking idiot I am, which is fair enough. And that you think you know more about football than Jim Harbaugh. I most certainly don't. But he's not following the Moneyball playbook, that is for sure. And I'll leave it at that.
But you know what? Points win games. And we have been in every game this season. I know that I do love data and statistics, but I'm also on the other end where I love the psychology of it and the ephemeral nature of mindset. Is that, you know, even you're looking at 6-0, you go, okay, we got to try and get a score here. If we're down by a field goal, we got to get a score. Just puts a little bit of pressure, builds it up. You've got kicker who's a kicker. You've got Dicker who you can trust. Points win games. Statistics. Well,
here is my point. Why sometimes the 2-point attempt is worth it. Everyone just assumes the extra point is a done deal. It's a signed fait accompli. As you saw, you can miss extra points, which is why some coaches go for it. All right, we've been rabbiting on. We're up to 40 minutes. We've got to push through. Yeah. Sorry, Andy. We need to be reined in. Okay, let's move. Unless there's anything else to say about the game, Jack. Nope. All right, snakes and ladders for me this week. And I'll start with a couple of snakes. It's the worst snake impression anyone's ever done. I'll give two snakes out. Zion, we've discussed him because of the failure to pick up stunts. The other one I'm going to mention is Kamani Vidal. I wanted to see more from him. He got the 6 carries, only had the 16 yards. You don't get these chances every game, Kamani. And in fact, as a guy drafted in the 6th round, sometimes you just get the 1 year to show yourself. So come on, bud. I know you've got a lot of skill. Seize the moment. This week, not so good. You're down the snake. Flip it over to up the ladder. Throw a blanket over the corners. We discussed earlier. Jasir had a good game. Cam Hart, Tahib still standing in, stepping up. I want to call out for my up the ladder moment. The game is won on inches, how you respond to adversity, securing points. Hassan Haskins, when adversity struck, when we botched that snap, he sprinted for the ball, and him tapping that ball out of bounds saves 4 or 5 points. Massive play. So well done.
Nice. All right. I've got no one to introduce my teachable moment. Last week was brought to you by Cascade Draft. I'm a little more of myself this week, so let's get back to reality. This week, the teachable moment is brought to you by the Byzantine Empire. In the 6th century, the Byzantine Emperor Justinian I embarked on an ambitious project to codify and organize centuries of Roman law into a cohesive system, the Justinian Code. It was a work in progress made up of multiple parts like the Codex, which pulled together old imperial pronouncements, the Digesta, which collated scholars' opinions into established law, and the Novellae, representing new laws that adapted and to changing times. Each part built on the other, aiming for clarity and effectiveness. Similarly, Justin Herbert's development as the quarterback for the Chargers feels like his own Justinian Code of football, a continuous process of learning, adapting, and evolving. Herbert has been navigating the complexities of a challenging offense, much like Justinian navigating centuries of Roman law. Together with Greg Roman, his Comelito, Herbert is rewriting the narrative of second and long situations, where many would opt for a conservative play call. Instead of simply setting up third and manageable, Herbert's approach reflects the spirit of the Novellae, introducing something bold and new to the Chargers' game plan. The Chargers' strategy, especially under pressure, embodies the idea that no situation, whether it be long yardage or a tough defense, is beyond reform. Just as Justinian's reforms transformed an empire, Herbert's evolving style shows the value of avoiding conservatism, pushing the boundaries and making decisive plays even when the path isn't clear. It's still a work in progress, but by trusting in their own version of institutions, their skill, preparation, and chemistry, Herbert and the Chargers are finding a way to write their own code for success. Does that ring true with you, Mr. Lawyer? Class dismissed.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like the Justinian Code saw the kind of fall of the Roman Empire – and the growth of the Byzantine one. There will be draconian punishment if you breach the code. So I'm looking at you, Zion. I'm looking at Pipkins and anyone else who has transgressed. But give it another 400 years, we might end up with a Magna Carta and perhaps a Super Bowl. One day I'll ask Jack, what leads you to think of these analogs? What makes you go, you know what, today the teachable moment's about Justinian, but maybe save the secret sauce and just eat the beautiful, beautiful thoughts that come from your mind. All right.
It is the secret sauce. Okay, let's get into looking at the Cleveland Browns. Where are we? Here we go. So the 2-6 Browns finally found some magic. They scored over 20 points for the first time this season. Jameis Winston stepping in for, we're not going to say his name, threw for over 300 yards. Winston led a confident Browns offense that scored early thanks to field goals, even managed for the first time this year, a 70-yard touchdown drive. Cedric Tillman had a decent game with two touchdowns. Winston's performance, 27 completions for 334 and three touchdowns, brought back shades of Joe Flacco. It wasn't without its tense moments, obviously playing against the Baltimore Ravens. There was a near interception on the final drive that made it pretty interesting watching, but luck and maybe the late Jim Donovan's spirit was on Cleveland's side. The defense made one last stand against Lamar Jackson, securing the Browns' first home win and giving fans their very taste of victory this season. I know we've jumped straight into the game because we're kind of running out of time. Let's go some opening headlines, Al. What do you see of the Cleveland Browns?
My headline is paying homage to my 92-year-old nonna. So I have Italian heritage, and when I was growing up, she'd sing nursery rhymes and get the words horribly wrong in English. And she used to sing Ba Ba Black Sheep like this. Ba ba black sheep, windy, windy morning, one by two and three by four. So Ba Ba Black Sheep, windy, windy morning. I draw the comparison to the windy, windy Cleveland Stadium, Brown Stadium. And I thought watching that game, Jack, the conditions really impacted this game. Justin Tucker missed a field goal. Our old friend Dustin Hopkins, who's familiar with the conditions, he got all three of his. There were some unbelievable missed interceptions in this game, Jack. There was the Kyle Hamilton one you referred to. Yep. Winston had three turnover-worthy plays. There is something about this place that throwing the ball is difficult for quarterbacks. The ball moves in the air, but it's also difficult for DBs to snag the ball in. So that's my headline. It will be tough and it will be windy, and it really suits running backs like Nick Chubb, who's coming back from that MCL, ACL, and at least had 16 carries last week, slowly coming back into his own. It's that type of football that you have to play, Jack, to win in Cleveland.
I do wonder, I've got a couple of headlines. I'm going to go with my best one though, but I do wonder if he chubbed out because he's only averaging 2.7 yards a carry. But again, such a gruesome injury to come back to. Perhaps they're just working in. My headline for the game is Cleveland always has wind and rain, but is there thunder and lightning too? I think heading into week nine, they're 2-6. Cleveland sits 17th in the power rankings, and they've got an 8.3% chance of making the playoffs. Offensively, they're ranked 30th, averaging just 17.2 points and 270-odd yards a game, despite being third in passing attempts. Now, a lot of that data is predicated on not Jameis Winston playing. So, you know, him throwing for 3-3-4 and three might change the success rate there a little bit. Cleveland's defense kind of had a day like we did against the Saints. They allowed 387 total yards. However, one of the keys to their victory, they held Baltimore to just 20% of third down conversion rates and got to Jackson three times, which is pretty good on a running quarterback. Can the Chargers come in and bring the thunder against the windy Browns? I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one. Did you have another headline, or do you want to just jump straight to keys to victory?
Is Father Jameis Kevin Stefanski's chance at salvation, the redemption story after sitting and putting up with Deshaun Watson under center. I think more than two dozen women made claims against Deshaun Watson. Jameis has only had the two women make claims against him for poor behavior over the years. So I don't know if it's, I guess it's an upgrade in one respect. But in terms of on the field, we know what Jameis is, right? He's going to give you opportunities. He will take his shots. His average depth of target last week was 11.7 yards. And let's not sleep on these wide receivers. I know Amari Cooper's out the door, but you still have Judy. You still have Tillman who stepped up. You still have Elijah Moore who had 100 yards and Njoku in the middle. They're a dangerous team. And a bit like Flacco, when you've got a quarterback who is a gunslinger and just gives you opportunities, the receivers like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, well, one of my first keys to victory and pass the pass, we'll get quick fire here, is force Jameis into decision-making, because we know that Jameis isn't a great decision-maker. He just slings it and hopes for the best. One of the keys is going to be getting home with design pressures. You have to get pressure on him. When you look at his PFF grade across his career, clearly when he is under pressure, his grade is below, is 40. For PFF, where kept clean and not blitzed, he's pretty good. And when blitzed, he's not too bad. But just get pressure on him. If we don't, I have a feeling that he's going to put up, you know, 300 plus yards again.
Yeah, especially with the corners. If Fulton can't play, they're tough matchups on the outside against young corners. And I think, Jack, to build on that, if we are going to manufacture pressure, they've got an experienced defensive line. A lot of those guys have been there for years. Betonio, Pocic, White Teller, Jack Conklin. The weak link, it's the 6'8" Ohio State left tackle, DeJuan Jones, who's still a second-year player. You got to attack that side because, like you said, Jack, under pressure against the Ravens, Winston had a 34.1 PFF grade and had two turnover-worthy plays. Other side of the ball, I'll start us off. Jim Schwartz is an aggressive defensive coordinator. They're blitzing the fourth highest rate in the NFL. You've got to find ways to take advantage of the Browns' aggressive tendencies. They like to come downhill. Diabate, JOK at linebacker. If Denzel Ward can't go, because he was in the concussion protocol, after having a head knock in the game, take those opportunities and don't be afraid to stretch sideline to sideline as well, because they're coming downhill. Bit of trickeration, bit of jet sweepage could be the key to victory.
And you are going up against PFF's number one ranked run defense in the NFL. So I know that we want to establish the run. We want to be a running team. I think it's going to have to come in different ways. And we must nullify the pass rush early. The communication, it's going to be loud. It's going to be windy. The communication between Herbert, Roman, and the offensive line has got to be there, because I do not want Myles Garrett sneaking up on Justin Herbert and snapping his fibula. Just on Myles Garrett, did you see the play a couple of weeks ago when he jumped up and was it blocked the field goal? Unbelievable. Freak. What he Freak. Is just... He's one of my favorite players to watch when they're not playing the Chargers. Jump into results.
Yeah, let's do it. What do you think? I'm predicting with my heart today, because if I just look at it dispassionately, I'm pretty worried about playing the rounds over there. But I'm going to stick true. I'm going to trust Harbaugh and his conservative processes. And I'm going to say the Chargers find a way to score 24 points. Wow. And the Browns score 20 and lose, because one of those 24 points will be a pick six that Jameis throws, and the Chargers make a push towards the playoffs 5-3 after this game.
If I was a betting man, I'd put Molden for an INT for those of you out there. Dom Milan, you guys like to put money on the game?
You should have had two last week, if not for the fucking officials. Anyway,
I'm very much like you. I think this is where Harbaugh's conservatism actually works against, as you said, a downhill defense and a Jameis Winston that wants to get big chunk plays. I think this is a close game. I think it's 20-17 to the Bolts, but it's going to be a very, very, very close one. It could come down to a Dicker the Kicker field goal to win. Right, 53 minutes. We love doing this segment because we get to expand our minds a little bit and sort of focus on a league-wide understanding. What's your first NFL headline, Alistair?
I'm going to take us straight to Washington and the fiasco at the end of the Bears-Commanders game. And let me just point out, we spoke about Tyrique Stevenson, the cornerback out of Miami, formerly of Georgia, during pre-draft prep. And I said, listeners, Tyrique Stevenson had to leave Georgia after having fights with the coaching staff, Kirby Smart, and he left town to go to Miami. Well, if you haven't seen this footage, we'll link it. On the Hail Mary play at the end of the game, Tyrique Stevenson is standing by the sideline taunting the Washington crowd, thinking he has an unassailable lead. The ball is snapped and he's still taunting the crowd. About a second and a half later, he turns around and realizes he's in the play, goes to run off, tries to punch the ball, and his man, Noah Brown, out the back, catches the Hail Mary touchdown. Tyrique Stevenson, if you were a Bill Belichick player, you'd be buried underground right now. You'd be dead.
And did you see Keenan Allen's face at the end there? He's smiling and it's like, been here before, guys? Clearly not. I have. Oh, gosh. Okay, I'm going to go full Vince McMahon here. So, listeners, I apologize. Your time. And this is to Anthony Richardson, who decided to
your take time. So
your time. He decided to take himself out of the game because he was, quote, tired and I needed a rest. Literally, dude, like, come on, what's going on? Like, you need to toughen up. Who's the coach of the Colts? Steichen. Is it Steichen? Has come out and gone, actually, mate, you're going to get an extended rest. You're sitting on the bench. That is wrestling move. That's Vince McMahon 101 if I've never seen it. And Flacco comes in. When realistically Flacco, like he came in at the Browns, like Jameis does, what did he throw? He threw for 716 and 7 touchdowns earlier when he had to step in. Anthony Richardson's going to be sleeping on the bench while an old man steals his thunder. Bizarre. That's one of the more bizarre things I've seen.
Outrageous. Look, he did body slam a 300-pound lineman on that play, but no one's ever seen that before. You can't tap out on a third down, man. You can't just be like, come out. It's third down. One more from me, but I'll decide which one I go with. Are you going to talk about the Jets in yours?
Nope.
Okay. I'll set you up here. Their season looks like it's probably done. They managed to lose to Jacoby Brissett's Patriots in a game that really this one was the fault of their kicker, Greg Zuerlein, who missed an extra point and also missed an important field goal. Just when A-Rod was showing some chemistry with Garrett Wilson, what has happened here? What has happened here? They took a gamble. I'm all for pushing the chips in if you think you can get a guy who's just recently won two NFL MVPs. But the issue is the type that has percolated around the Chargers until recently, poor ownership.
Mm.
And the Jets have had bad ownership with the Johnsons for a long, long time. Can't get out of their own way, Jack.
I don't know. You put a quarterback who has or wants a lot of power with bad ownership. You know, the Johnsons and him probably went into a vacant subway station, took some mushrooms and saw the stars and took the constellations and sat there and said, we are one, get me Devontae Adams, Salah needs to leave. And so saith brother Aaron, and brother Aaron getseth what he deserveth. So speaking of Johnsons, let me go, and before we wrap up the show, I watched the Detroit Lions on the weekend, the game, because I just think they're one of the hottest tickets in football at the moment. And I just kept thinking of that scene in Austin Powers. And this is take it back for our younger listeners. But when they think about, it's a Johnson, it's a Johnson. And I'm saying that Johnson's got a big Johnson. Ben Johnson is wielding his hog about as an offensive coordinator like a maniac. Sorry, Detroit have put up 49 points and Goff did nothing. Did absolutely nothing at all. I mean, Jamison Williams was suspended. They don't have Aiden Hutchinson. It's like they haven't missed a beat. And let's be honest, like, I think Ben Johnson, for me, is the greatest offensive mind in the NFL at the moment. It's clearly showing it. However, he is being allowed to do that, and I will always take it back to Dan Campbell. The environment and culture that he's been able to cultivate in Detroit, turn a complete not basket case, but a franchise that was in the doldrums for years. They are the NFC. The NFC is a bit murky at the moment. They are clear number ones. And the luck just keeps falling their way. They've had some bad luck. Jordan Love doesn't look like he's going to be playing this week. And so they're going to get another dub in the NFC. So go Ben Johnson. Like, go and get a head coaching job, man.
And it's Jesse Minter, I hope you're watching what he's doing and he's just biding his time patiently and turning down head coaching opportunities until the right one approaches. Do the same. Stay with us forever. Never
please,
leave.
Please,
never
leave. Please, God. Never leave. Never leave. Never leave. Well, that wraps it up. 59 minutes almost. Alistair, is there anything else you wanted to add or speak to our listeners about?
Just thanks for the support. We have never had more engagement on Twitter with us ever in the YouTube comments. We appreciate you. We see the people who tune in every week. I can see on the data there are people in Ireland, in Denmark, Germany. There's someone in St. Paul, Minnesota who watches every show. Whoever you are, let us know. So thank you. We love doing this and we can't wait to welcome Andy back after his holiday next week.
Indeed. Thanks so much, team. If you're still with us, please like and subscribe. Chat with us on X. Chat with us on the YouTube comments. We always love to see. If you disagree with us, let us know politely. It's always nice. We always try and be polite. If you agree with us, let us know. Thank you so much. It's a joy to do it. It lightens my midweek every single time, as I'm sure it does you, Alistair. Andy, we miss you. I haven't done you justice, but I've tried. I've tried my very best. It's a win. Let's hope for a win in Cleveland. Bolt the fuck up, boys, and let's see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Backpedals looking, firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!